The music of a civilization has far-reaching consequences on consciousness, and thus influences the basic nature of a society. Music and its rhythms divert and compel the awareness, describing the limits within which a consciousness, thus fascinated, may operate. Control the music, then, and you own a powerful tool with which to shape the society. The Dosadi Analysis, BUSAB Documents. It was a half hour before Jedrick and McKee found themselves in the hallway leading to her quarters. McKee, aware of the effort she was expending to conceal a deep weariness, watched her carefully. She concentrated on presenting a show of vitality, her attention glued on the prospect ahead. There was no way of telling what went on in her mind. McKee did not attempt to break the silence. He had his own worries. Which was the real Jedrick? How was she going to employ Petrarchy? Could he resist her? He knew he was close to a solution of the Dosadi mystery, but the prospect of the twin gambles he was about to take filled him with doubts. On coming from the projection room, they'd found themselves in a strange delaying situation, as though it were something planned for their frustration. Everything had been prepared for their movement, guards warned, elevator waiting, doors opened. But every time they thought the way clear, they met interference. Except for the obvious importance of the matters which delayed them, it was easy to imagine a conspiracy. A party of Gowichan at Gate 70 wanted to surrender, but they demanded a parley first. One of Jedrick's aides didn't like the situation. Something about the assessment of the offer bothered her, and she wanted to discuss it with Jedrick. She stopped them halfway down the first hall outside the projection room. The aide was an older woman who reminded McKee vaguely of a Reeve lab worker at BUSAB, one who'd always been suspicious of computers, even antagonistic toward them. This Reeve had read every bit of history he could find about the evolution of such instruments, and liked to remind his listeners of the misuses of the Demopole. Human history had provided him with abundant ammunition, what with its periodic revolts against enslavement by machines. Once, he'd cornered McKee. "Look here. See this sign? Geigo. That's a very old sign that was hung above one of your ancient computers. It's an acronym. Garbage in, garbage out. You see, they knew." Yes, Jedrick's female aide reminded him of that Reeve. McKee listened to her worries. She roamed all around a central disquiet, never settling on a particular thing. Aware of Erich's deadline and Jedrick's fatigue, McKee felt the pressures bearing down upon him. The aide's data was accurate. Others had checked it. Finally, he could hold his impatience no longer. "Who fed this data into your computer?" The aide was startled at the interruption, but Jedrick turned to him, waiting.
"I think it was Holchance," the aide said.
"Why? Get him in here."
"Her."
"Her, then. Make sure she's actually the one who fed in that data." Holchance was a pinch-faced woman with deep wrinkles around very bright eyes. Her hair was dark and wiry, skin almost the color of McKee's. Yes, she was the one who'd fed the data into the computer because it had arrived on her shift, and she'd thought it too important to delegate.
"What is it you want?" she demanded.
He saw no rudeness in this. It was Dosadi directness. Important things were happening all around. Don't waste time. "You saw this assessment of the surrender offer?" he asked.
"Yes."
"Are you satisfied with it?"
"The data went in correctly."
"That's not my question."
"Of course I'm satisfied."
She stood ready to defend herself against any charge that she'd slighted her job. "Tell me, Holchance," he said. "If you wanted the Gowichan computers to produce inaccurate assessments, what would you do?" She thought about this a moment, blinked, glanced almost furtively at Jedrick, who appeared lost in thought.
"Well, sir, we have a regular filtering procedure for preventing."
"That's it," Jedrick said.
"If I were a Gowichan, I would not be doing that right now."
Jedrick turned, barked orders to the guards behind her.
"That's another trap. Take care of it."
As they emerged from the elevator on Jedrick's floor, there was another delay, one of the escort who'd been with McKee at Gate 18. His name was Todu Pelas, and McKee addressed him by name, noting the faint betrayal of pleasure this elicited. Pelas, too, had doubts about carrying out a particular order. "We're supposed to back up Tria's move by attacking across the upper parkway, but there are some trees and other growth knocked down up there that haven't been moved for 2 days." "Who knocked down those trees?" McKee asked.
"We did."
McKee understood. "You fainted." The Gowichan were supposed to believe this would provide cover for an attack, but there'd been no attack for 2 days. "They must be under pretty heavy strain," Jedrick said. McKee nodded. That, too, made sense. The alternative Gowichan assumption was that the humans were trying to fake them into attack at that point. But the cover had not been removed by either side for 2 days. Jedrick took a deep breath. "We have superior firepower, and when Tria..." "Well, you should be able to cut right through there to..." McKee interrupted. "Call off that attack."
"But..."
"Call it off." She saw the direction of his reasoning. Broey had learned much from the force which Gar and Tria had trained, and Jedrick herself had provided the final emphasis in the lesson. She saw there was no need to change her orders to Pelas. Pelas had taken it upon himself to obey McKee, not waiting for Jedrick's response, although she was his commander. He already had a communicator off his belt and was speaking rapidly into it.
"Yes, dig in for a holding action,"
he spoke in an aside to Jedrick. "I can handle it from here." In a few steps, Jedrick and McKee found themselves in her room. Jedrick leaned with her back against the door, no longer trying to conceal her fatigue.
"McKee, you're becoming very dosadi."
He crossed to the concealing panels, pulled out the bed. "You need rest."
"No time."
Yes, she knew all about the 60-hour deadline. Less than 55 hours now. Dosadi's destruction was a reaction she hadn't expected from X, and she blamed herself. He turned, studied her, saw that she'd passed some previously defined limit of personal endurance. She possessed no amplifiers of muscles or senses, none of the sophisticated aids McKee could call upon in emergencies. She had nothing but her own magnificent mind and body, and she'd almost run them out. She pressed on. This told him a great deal about her motivation. McKee found himself deeply touched by the fact that she'd not once berated him for hiding that ultimate threat which Erich held over Dosadi. She'd accepted it that someone in Erich's position could erase an entire planet, that McKee had been properly maneuvered into concealing this. The alternative she offered filled McKee with misgivings. Exchange? Bodies? He understood now that this was Pecharki's function, the price the old Gowichan paid for survival. Jedrick had explained.
"He will perform this service one more time. In exchange, we release him from Dosadi.
If he's one of the original... I mean, why doesn't he just leave?
We haven't provided him with a body he can use."
McKee had suppressed a feeling of horror. But the history of Dosadi which Jedrick unfolded made it clear that a deliberate loophole had been left in the Caliban contract which imprisoned this planet. Fannie Mae had even said it. He could leave in another body. That was the basic purpose behind this experiment.
New bodies for old.
Erich had expected this to be the ultimate enticement, luring McKee into the Gowichan plot, enlisting McKee's supreme abilities and his powerful position in Busab. A new body for his old one. All he'd have to do would be to cooperate in the destruction of a planet, conceal the real purpose of this project, and help set up another body trade planet better concealed. But Erich had not anticipated what might be created by Jedrick plus McKee. They now shared a particular hate and motivation. Jedrick still stood at the door waiting for him to decide.
"Tell me what to do," he said. "You're sure that you're willing to..."
"Jedrick!" He thought he saw the beginning of tears. It wasn't that she hid them, but that they reached a suppression level barely visible, and she defied them. She found her voice, pointed. "That panel, beside the bed. Pressure latch." The panel swung wide to reveal two shimmering rods about 2 centimeters in diameter. The rods danced with the energies of Petrarchy's cage. They emerged from the floor, bent at right angles about waist height, and as the panel opened, they rotated to extend into the room. 2 glowing handles about 1 meter apart. McKee stared at them. He felt a tightness in his breast. What if he'd misread Chedric? Could he be sure of any Dosadi? This room felt as familiar to him now as his quarters on CC. It was here that Chedric had taught him some of the most essential Dosadi lessons. Yet, he knew the old pattern of what she proposed. The discarded body with its donor ego had always been killed immediately. Why? You'll have your answer to that question when we've done this thing. A Dosadi response, ambiguous, heavy with alternatives. He glanced around the room, found it hard to believe that he'd known this place only these few days. His attention returned to the shimmering rods. Another trap? He knew he was wasting precious time, that he'd have to go through with this. But what would it be like to find himself in Jedrick's flesh, wearing her body as he now wore his own? Panspechi transferred, an ego from body to body. But something unspeakable, which they would not reveal, happened to the donor. McKee took a trembling breath. It had to be done. He and Jedrick shared a common purpose. She'd had many opportunities to use Petrarchy simply to escape or to extend her life. The way, he realized now, that Broey had used the Dosadi secret. The fact that she'd waited for a McKee forced him to believe her. Jedrick's followers trusted her. And they were Dosadi. And if he and Jedrick escaped, Erich would find himself facing a far different McKee from the one who'd come so innocently across the rim. They might yet stay Erich's hand. The enticement had been real, though. No doubting that. Shed an old body, get a new one. And the rim had been the major source of raw material. Strong, resilient bodies. Survivors. "What do I do?" he asked. He felt a hand on his shoulder, and she spoke from beside him. "You are very Dosadi, McKee. Astonishing." He glanced at her, saw what it had cost her to move here from the door. He slipped a hand around her waist, eased her to a sitting position on the bed and within reach of the rods. "Tell me what to do." She stared at the rods, and McKee realized it was rage driving her. Rage against Erich, the embodiment of X, the embodiment of a contrived fate. He understood this. The solution of the Dosadi mystery had left him feeling empty, but on the edges there was such a rage as he'd never before experienced. He was still Busap, though. He wanted no more bloodshed because of Dosadi, no more Gowichan justifications. Jedrick's voice interrupted his thoughts, and he saw that she also shared some of his misgivings. "I come from a long line of heretics. None of us doubted that Dosadi was a crime, that somewhere there was a justice to punish the criminals." McKee almost sighed. Not the old messiah dream. Not that. He would not fill that role, even for Dosadi. It was as though Jedrick read his mind. Perhaps, with that simulation model of him she carried in her head, this was exactly what she did. "We didn't expect a hero to come and save us. We knew that whoever came would suffer from the same deficiencies as the other non-Dosadi we saw here. You were so slow. Tell me, McKee, what drives a Dosadi?" He almost said, "Power." She saw his hesitation, waited. "The power to change your condition," he said. "You make me very proud, McKee. But how did you know I was McKee?"
He swallowed. Then, yes, I guess that was the easiest part for you. It was much more difficult finding your abilities and shaping you into a Dosadi. But I might have been. Tell me how I did it, McKee. It was a test. He saw that. How had she known absolutely that he was the one she needed? I was sent here in a way that evaded Broey. And that's not easy. Her glance flickered ceilingward. They tried to bait us from time to time. Heavy. Compromised. Contaminated. Useless. Sometimes a stranger looks out of Heavy's eyes. My eyes are my own. The first thing Barank reported about you. But even before that, yes, they used Heavy to tell you I was coming. And he told you that you could use my body. He had to be truthful with you up to a point. You could read Heavy. How clever they thought they were being. I had to be vulnerable. Really vulnerable. The first thing. You found out about me. He nodded. Suspicions confirmed. All of that money on my person. Bait. I was someone to be eliminated. I was a powerful enemy of your enemies. And you were angered by the right things. You saw that, McKee? You people are so easy to read. So easy. And the weapons I carried. You were supposed to use those to destroy yourselves. The implications. I would have seen that if I'd had first-hand experience of Erich. You knew what he intended for us. My mistake was to read your fears as purely personal. In time, we're wasting time. You fear we'll be too late? Once more he looked at the shimmering rods. What was it Petrarchy did? McKee felt events rushing over him, engulfing him. What bargain had Jedrick really driven with Petrarchy? She saw the question on his face. My people knew all along that Petrarchy was just a tool of the god who held us prisoner. We forced a bargain on that god. That Caliban. Did you think we would not recognize the identity between the powers of that cage and the powers of our god wall? No more delays, McKee. It's time to test our bargain.